So I want to acknowledge my co-author, Sonia Alemano, who couldn't be here. She's the dean of our new College of Public Health, so she's running around doing deanly things. But I am with the College of Public Health and Department of Health Policy and Management, and also assistant director in our newly formed Office of Public Health Practice. What we're going to be talking about is some psychometric analysis that I performed on some program evaluation data that were collected in a citywide HIV prevention program. And there are a couple of things I want to draw your attention to. There's also a handout that's going around. That's where I put all of the data. It's a pretty data-intensive paper. I spared you from that from the PowerPoint. But grab the handout if you can, if you want to follow along. So MSM continue to be at high risk for HIV infection. A lot of us know that who are in the field. Although they represent only about 2% of the population, they account for about 57% of all HIV infections, and that's, of course, from the HIV surveillance report in 2009. Women are also at risk. Rate of new HIV infections among Hispanic and Latino women is 3 times higher than white women. It's 15 times higher for African-American women. Youth and adults are, of course, also at risk. The highest rate of new infections is among 20-24-year-olds. But look at this. New HIV infections among 15 to 19 and 50 to 59-year-olds has increased over the last couple of years. Now, a lot of us that design and implement community-based HIV prevention programs use HIV knowledge as one of several measures to assess the outcomes of prevention programs. And usually that's in the form of a set of simple questions about HIV risk behaviors. It's either on a Likert-type scale, like a strength of agreement, or it's a dichotomous response option, like true or false. It's guided by the theory-driven principle that an increase in knowledge will help result in a decrease in HIV risk. And actually, I'm going to challenge that second bullet point. We're doing some follow-up analysis, and it doesn't appear to be as strong as what you might think. And that paper will be presented here, hopefully, next year. HIV prevention program managers commonly use one measure of HIV knowledge, you know, sort of one set of items. And community-wide prevention programs, typically those that receive funding from CDC and then grant it back out to nonprofit organizations, and usually what they do is do, you know, systematic evaluations where basically all of the grantees use the same pre-test, post-test instrument, regardless of the population that you're serving, which is the case of the data that I'm working on. So what we wanted to do... let me just go to this for a second. When you look into a PubMed search to try to identify some papers that really allow you to assess the psychometric properties of that HIV knowledge scale, you get thousands of papers that report various aspects of HIV prevention programs, but very, very few report on the psychometrics of these scales, which is sort of odd considering that a lot of weight is placed on that. Again, more on that later. But very, very few scales have actually been subjected to repeated measurement to verify factor structure and generalizability, which we'll get into in a minute. And this at the bottom is carried over on this slide. Well, but in 1997, luckily, Carey, Morrison, Beatty, and Johnson published a 45-item survey to measure HIV knowledge. And it's based upon 10 sub-studies that involved a literature review, expert input, focus groups, item and factor analysis, internal consistency and test retest. They did several validity analysis, reading level, time completion. So they really took these 45 items and just tortured them to try to perfect an instrument that they feel like is an accurate representation of this construct we call HIV knowledge. Now, in 2002, Carey and Schroeder reduced that to 18 items to see if it still performed as well, and it did. Strong internal consistencies, strong test retest, strong association with the longer version of the instrument. However, the analysis was reported in the aggregate. So all of these numbers right here are for all of the populations, you know, everyone who filled out the survey. It's an overall set of scale values. And of course, we know when we report data overall, it could mask important variations among those subpopulations. So that's really what the purpose of this study was to look at is, you know, using the same scale, do the psychometric properties of that scale differ by gender, sexual orientation, race, ethnicity, and age, all of which are factors that are important in HIV prevention. So the source of data, as I mentioned, we pulled this from program evaluation data from a citywide comprehensive HIV prevention program in an urban Midwestern city. It reached multiple high-risk populations, and the time period was 2008 to 2011. So that's where the data come from. It was, again, the program evaluation was using a paper and pencil self-administered survey using pre-test, post-test design. I only used the pretest data for this analysis because I didn't want the data to be influenced by the intervention, so I only used the pretest data. And because, for those of you that may be familiar with psychometrics, missing data is just really not your friend in that. I only selected the responses that had complete HIV knowledge responses. So they had to answer all 10 of the questions. They could be correct or incorrect, but they had to mark something, no missing data. And that resulted in an N of a little over 5,000. And I'm holding my hand up, by the way, because I spent Friday night here in the emergency room because I sliced my hand open. So I'm waving at everyone. Okay, so the measures. There were a number of things that we asked on the survey, but these were the measures I pulled out for this analysis. We had a race and ethnicity question, but then looking at the cell sizes, I reduced them into black, white, and Hispanic. There were other racial ethnic categories that folks responded to, but the cell sizes are really too low for analysis, so they were condensed there. We also asked a gender question, male, female. We asked there were two transgender options, male to female, female to male. We condensed that into transgender. To determine sexual orientation, we computed gender with another question, who do you have sex with, and we reduced that down to heterosexual, gay, lesbian, and bisexual. The age categories corresponded with the HIV surveillance that's reported in our jurisdiction, also with CDC, so that we could do some comparisons. If you have any questions, stop me anytime. And obviously, an important measure was HIV knowledge. So we took the 18-item Carey-Schroeder scale that I talked about earlier. We reduced it to 10 items, primarily because of respondent burden. We had to keep the survey down to 2 pages, and there were a lot of other questions that we were asking, so we had to make some decisions because we were running out of real estate. The way we asked the question was true, false, don't know. Okay, that's how we ask the questions. And you'll see those are the 10 questions right there. I'll leave that up just a second while I get a drink. But on your handout, it's on there as well. So the analysis, descriptive statistics, obviously. Chromevox Alpha to measure internal consistency, which you can use on dichotomous on dichotomous data or categorical data. It's identical to the KR20 if you're familiar with that. We did use, because the data are categorical, a principal components analysis, which is what you commonly see in psychometric papers, but that's be used for more continuous data. Because this is categorical, I used a new form of principal components analysis called categorical principal components analysis, CAT-PCA. There's only been a handful of papers that have discussed this because it was just really promulgated in 2007 by Linting et al. If you are familiar with this, actually Linting put out a tutorial. I think it was published just a few months ago. It's not in print yet, but it is available electronically on PubMed. It's really interesting if you're interested in that stuff. I did set the model to one factor because we were assessing unidimensionality. All of the items were given equal weights, so you know everyone had an equal opportunity in the scale. All the items did. Nominal scaling and principal normalization. And the way I sort of explain this is that it's like the orthogonal rotation in traditional principal components analysis. It helps you interpret the component loadings easier. The analysis was formed using SPSS for the Mac, go Mac, with the categories add-on module. All right, so let's get in some results. This is where your handout will be important because I'll be referring to that. But table one, you'll see in the sample, there's 5,000 surveys that were retained. Again, it was pretest only, and they had to answer all of the HIV knowledge responses. 58% of the data were collected during the 08-09 grant year, 21 and the 9-10, and then about another fifth in 11-12. So you can see the distribution of when the data were collected. Slightly more than half were female. The majority of the 5,000 were heterosexual, but among the LGBT, here's the breakdown, there are roughly equal numbers of lesbian, gay, and bisexual, roughly, and 5.5% of LGBT transgender. 66.8% were black, 13% Hispanic, and 15% white. It was also positively skewed towards younger age groups. And you'll see that less than 18 years old is roughly a third of the responses. So internal consistency, and this is where you'll need to look at tables 2 through 4. Overall, our alpha was 0.762, but look at the range. The range was 0.524 to 0.892. 70% difference. This is what we were looking for. This is what we suspected was the case. But quite frankly, I didn't think it was going to be this large. There were several surprises in the data, also about what was the source of the variation. So overall, it was 0.762. Generally, in social sciences, we like to see 0.7 or higher. So this is okay. It was roughly equal for males and females, so we didn't see a big difference there. But this is where it starts to get interesting. When you look at the LGBT, it's most internally consistent for transgenders. Look at that, 0.86. Least for lesbians, 0.6. This will probably make a little bit more sense when we dig into the questions a little deeper. Roughly equal for gay and bisexual, you know, at the 0.69. Again, you know, 0.7 is the cutoff, but you use that cutoff with discretion. It's still, you know, okay. By race, ethnicity, it's most internally consistent for Hispanics. Again, high, 0.8, less for whites, and lower for blacks, 0.74. By age group, it was most internally consistent for respondents 60 years of age and older, which is interesting. Most internally consistent for them, least for 30 to 39-year-olds, and you see it's 0.524. So age was our source of the largest variation in the internal consistency. There are certainly other variations that you see by LGBT and race, but age had the widest range there. You'll also notice that there were several instances where removing items 1, 4, and 5 would increase internal consistency among some of those groups, but the increases were really small. So, you know, ideally you would remove items that are pulling down your alpha, but the margin is really small. It would have a negligible impact. Okay, unidimensionality. In categorical principal components analysis, the overall sort of value you look for is VAF, which is called variance accounted for. The overall VAF for everybody was 34, so we use that number to compare all the subpopulations. But you see the range there was 30 to 49, roughly 60% difference. So we're also seeing a difference not only in the internal consistency, but also in its unidimensionality. Again, roughly equal for males and females, same as before. By LGBT, it's highest for transgender, same as before. Lowest for lesbians, same as before. There was a difference between gay and bisexual men. By race, ethnicity, highest for whites. slightly lower for Hispanics, which is kind of similar to before, but again, lowest for blacks. Same thing with internal consistency. By age group, highest for 50 to 59-year-olds, but in the 60-plus category, it was also extremely high there, so it's consistent with the internal consistency findings. And lowest for 19 to 24-year-olds, look at that, 30. Again, age, we're getting a lot of distribution. You might notice that we had trouble with item 5 again. There were some component loadings less than 0.399, and that's a pretty generally accepted cutoff point for loadings. So there were some problems with that item. Okay. So our 10-item version, the internal consistency was 0.762, which is comparable to what Carey and Schroeder found in 2002 when they reduced their 45-item scale down to 18. It is lower, but probably not because it's a reduced number of items. Our sample had a lot more, for example, African Americans in it who did score below other racial ethnic categories. So I just didn't want you to misinterpret that, it's a fewer number of items and that's what's pulling it down. That could contribute to it, but that's likely not the case. Our analysis for unidimensionality confirmed one dimension, and we also found problems with item 5, but there were differences. It was mixed for MSM. Internal consistency said one thing, VIF said another. It was very strong for transgender. It was low performance overall for African Americans. I'm moving along because I've run out of time. Low performance for some key age groups in the 19 to 39-year-old area, but very strong for 60-plus-year-olds, which was interesting. Item 5, that's the item right there. We would recommend removing it going forward. One of the things you may have noticed is the heterosexist language probably contributed to some, well, number one, contributed to some of those scores. But also number two, even if it didn't pull down the scores, the reality is you're not accurately measuring the range of HIV risk behaviors of that population. So even if it was internally consistent and unidimensional, you'd still have an issue of mismatch. Conclusions, the construct of HIV knowledge is different for populations at high risk for HIV. Scale doesn't measure the range of risk behaviors, and what we would recommend is improving scales for younger age groups and African Americans. Those are key populations at high risk. And also to explore different but comparable HIV knowledge scales for LGBT populations. Thank you.